10 Democratic hopefuls took to the debate stage in Texas last night. A big theme, healthcare.
149 million Americans will no longer be able to have their current insurance. That's in 4 years. I don't think that's a bold idea. I think it's a bad idea.
We'll have more on how they fared.
There were four of those 10 candidates who had interesting nights and who stood out for various reasons.
And WeWork chooses NASDAQ for its public market debut. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we break down what happened in last night's nearly three-hour-long Democratic presidential debate, I promise our recap will be much shorter. Here's what you missed. WeWork's parent company has chosen the NASDAQ for its public market debut. That could come as early as the week of September 23rd. We report that the company also plans to make corporate governance changes after it came under criticism from would-be investors about financial dealings the company had with its co-founder, Adam Neumann. Mr. Neumann cashed out hundreds of millions of dollars from the company ahead of its listing, raising questions. We is expected to set a preliminary price range for its shares next week, which could see it valued at below $20 billion. That might seem like a lot of money, but it's less than half of what it was valued at during its last fundraising round earlier this year. And the Trump administration turned over a key piece of new information to lawyers for 9/11 victims' families. It's the name of a Saudi official contained in a 2012 report on the terrorist attacks. While the FBI agreed to give the lawyers for the victims' families the name, it declined to make the information public. Aruna Viswanatha has more.
They're focused on these three people. There's a lot of dispute over just how significant these people were, but the attorneys for the families have sued Saudi Arabia and is seeking to hold them liable for these attacks. And they have focused on two people who were affiliated with the Saudi consulate in Los Angeles, and they had helped two of the hijackers to some extent get set up in the area. And there's an FBI investigative document that describes a third Saudi official who may have been more senior to them, who may have tasked them with helping these hijackers. And so that is the information that they sought in this litigation.
Aruna says this information is being sought ahead of a trial that could begin as soon as next year.
So the families have sued the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia many years ago, and they've been pursuing this case in which they want to hold the government of Saudi Arabia liable, and they want damages. They want them to pay them money for their involvement, alleged involvement in the attacks. And so they think getting the name of this person is potentially really significant for them because it will give them additional evidence that government officials related to the officials from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia knew about the plan and helped the hijackers in some way.
Saudi Arabia has denied that it had any official involvement in the 9/11 attacks. The Saudi embassy didn't immediately respond to our request for comment. And Juul is debating whether it should embrace or fight President Trump's plan to remove flavored e-cigarettes from the market. According to people familiar with the matter, the debate centers on this. On the one hand, the policy would be crippling to the company. More than 80% of its sales are from flavors that would be banned. But on the other hand, they agree that the move could help curb teen vaping, and it might help avert a bigger threat, which is that the FDA bans e-cigarettes altogether. Just in case you're curious, Juul's most popular flavors at the moment are mint and mango. Now, our main story this morning, last night's presidential debate. Our executive Washington editor, Gerald Seib, closely watched the performance of all 10 candidates on ABC News. He says there are four who stood out. First up, Joe Biden.
You know, the big question of the night was going to be how the vice president would defend his position on top of the polls, particularly because this was the first occasion in which he would come face to face with his two biggest challengers, Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, much more liberal candidates than he is. And the vice president answered that question right at the beginning. He was going to be aggressive and challenge them before he could be challenged by them. He did that right at the beginning on health care and essentially said, how are you going to pay for your expensive government-paid Medicare for All health care programs?
How are we going to pay for it? I want to hear tonight how that's happened. The senator has, in fact, come forward and said how he's going to pay for it, but it gets him about halfway there. There's a lot of other things that need to be done.
And then when he thought they didn't provide an adequate answer to that question, he said, we expect honesty and candor from our candidates.
The fact of the matter is, we're in a situation where, if you notice, he hadn't answered the question. This is about candor, honesty, big ideas. Well, let's have a big idea. The tax of 2% that the senator's talking about, that raises about $3 billion. Guess what? That leaves you about $28 billion short.
And that's pretty much the way it went all night, with Joe Biden being much more aggressive, much more on the offense, less on the defense than he had been in the earlier debates. He still got tangled up in some of those typical Joe Biden verbiage problems, particularly when he tried to explain his long history of positions on the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. But overall, I think a better performance by him, and certainly a more aggressive one.
Next up, Gerald says Beto O'Rourke had a standout night.
Beto O'Rourke, the former congressman from Texas, increasingly in the last few weeks, his campaign has been focused more and more on controlling guns since there was a big massacre in his hometown of El Paso, Texas. That remained the case on Thursday night, and it pursued that issue with great emotion.
Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore.
So did he go too far by essentially saying, we will confiscate assault weapons? That's certainly a bold position for somebody who represented a district in pro-gun Texas. We'll see about that, but it certainly set him apart from the field and I think advanced his cause, probably bought him a ticket to proceed a little bit further in this campaign.
And then there's Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar. Here's Gerald again.
She's been at the back of the field, but she emerged, I think, a little bit more on Thursday night as a defender of the moderate position along with Vice President Biden. And she particularly did that as well on health care and did it effectively when she took on Bernie Sanders, again saying, your bill is flawed because it would eliminate private insurance for millions of Americans who want to have private insurance. And she did that very bluntly.
Last one, if you guessed New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, you get a prize.
He also has been in the back of the pack, but I think he stood out on Thursday night because he was relaxed, he was forceful at times, he was humorous at times. He was particularly forceful against President Trump, and when he addressed the president's trade policy, he took him on directly by saying the president is making a serious mistake by pursuing a trade policy that's an America alone trade policy.
And what's Gerald's final verdict?
It may not have been one of those events that really changed the race in any fundamental way, but I think Vice President Biden will emerge secure as the front runner still. And the other three candidates I mentioned, Beto O'Rourke, Amy Klobuchar, and Cory Booker, now at least have a chance to fight their way into that top tier of Democratic candidates.
If you're hankering for more, we've got further analysis and some more takeaways from the debate up on WSJ.com. On to markets. We briefed you in our afternoon show yesterday about the ECB's decision to cut its key interest rate and introduce its biggest stimulus in more than 3.5 years. In response, President Trump accused the bank of deliberately weakening the euro against the dollar. Well, what's actually happened in markets? Here's Caitlin Ostroff with the latest.
Yeah, so originally you had a sell-off that happened in Europe. So you saw yields go up as bonds were being sold. You saw some of these stocks go down. And you also saw the euro fall a little bit at one point up to 0.7%. And it doesn't sound like much, but one of the things that President Trump has been very concerned with is amid this global backdrop of uncertainty, some of the currencies have been pushing down and the U.S. dollar has gotten stronger. And so by cutting rates further in Europe, that pushes the euro down and it makes the dollar stronger and it makes European stocks and items a little bit cheaper to people globally. Now, after the dust settled a little bit, after President Draghi spoke, you did see the market tend to pick back up a bit. And that was mostly because the market had basically already priced in much of what was expected. And so there wasn't a long-lasting effect, but it's going to be something to watch out for with the Fed meeting next week as to if they do cut interest rates and how that's going to affect the U.S. dollar and the euro.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. Felicity Huffman is set to be sentenced this afternoon for her role in the college admissions cheating scheme. Her sentencing kicks off the penalty portion for the 15 parents who've pled guilty. Prosecutors have asked that she go to jail for 1 month, then be given a year of supervised release. They also say she should be fined $20,000. Prosecutors argue that she defrauded the College Board, the nonprofit that runs the SAT, and tried to defraud colleges after she arranged to have a test proctor inflate her daughter's SAT score. Her legal team has asked the judge to sentence her to 1 year of probation, 250 hours of community service, and the same $20,000 fine. They say her conduct was out of character and that she was repentant. We'll have the latest in our afternoon edition. Finally, we've got a big section this weekend looking at the new rules of money. The idea is that for a generation facing a huge amount of student debt and soaring home prices, well, we need to tweak the financial playbook. We've got money advice from pros like former Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson and a look at how far an entry-level salary of around $50,000 a year can go in cities across the U.S. And of course, there's a question. Have you ever considered moving to a city with a lower cost of living? What factors helped you decide if you should stay or go? We're always happy to hear from you. You can email us at whatsnews, all one word, at WSJ.com or tweet us at WSJ Podcasts. That's What's News from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.